And now, introduce for the second time our speaker today, Deborah Seville. Deborah?
All right. So this morning I'm going to talk to you about forest bathing, and I think you'll see how it's related to the seventh principle of Unitarian Universalism. So I'm not going to talk about that so much, but I'm going to talk about my own experience of how I came to it, what inspires me, and a little bit about what it is. And I know some of you are joining the walk this afternoon to actually experience it. As is the practice in forest bathing, we begin by acknowledging the pre-European inhabitants of this land. So I, as far as my research told me, we are on the land of peoples whose tribal affiliations were primarily Seneca, and also Iroquois and Lenape. So we just want to, you know, bow deep bows to them for being on this land. And many others, I'm sure, whose names are lost to us. You know, I think one website said that there's evidence of habitation around here 12,000 years ago. We probably don't know who they are, but we're grateful to them. So, like many people, I enjoy being outdoors. My primary activities are hiking. I walk a lot. I take the stairs at the hospital, so I walk a lot. Hiking, backpacking in the wilderness, and also paddling my canoe or kayak. I just came off of a 10-day river trip in Moab, Utah, on the Green River, which goes through the Canyonlands National Park area. We had it all, windstorms, flash floods, rain and thunder, but it was fabulous. So, you know, weather is weather, right? So I came to these activities as a young adult. I grew up in various cities around the country. In fact, I was born in Dayton, Ohio. So I'm somewhat familiar with this part of the country, but I haven't lived there for a really long time. My parents were not particularly outdoorsy. I think actually my mother was probably afraid of being outside in general. But I did things here and there, campfire girls, church camp, I remember a couple of times. But interesting, as I'm reflecting on this, a turning point came when I took a walk with friends in the woods in East Texas, near Texarkana, Texas, where I lived as a young teenager. And it may have been my first time walking in the woods. This is the first time that I can remember. And just feeling something, not sure what it was. I might even have been afraid. I don't remember. But I can't say exactly what. But in any case, I found myself, especially after moving to Idaho in the early 70s, hiking and backpacking became something I was very interested in. And it particularly resonated with my introverted, mostly non-competitive nature. You know, I could just walk. I didn't have to be anything to anybody else. So aside from my own psychological makeup, there's a few other inspirations I'd like to mention. One is a podcast. I'm kind of a podcast nerd, especially since COVID. Very good one called BBC Earth, and each episode shares a story about what we in forest therapy call the more than human world, not the natural world, but the more than human world. It's greater than we are, I think. So one episode that sticks out of my mind was of a woman whose husband died suddenly, and she went through several years of traditional grief counseling, which I'm sure was helpful. But and grief has its own path, which cannot be fixed or managed particularly. But the point was that she felt unable to move and take the next step in her life. She was kind of really mired in this grief. And completely by chance, probably just wanted something else different to do, she took a class on foraging for wild mushrooms and became very intimate with this amazing life form, which I have to remind myself, they're not plants. They're something completely different. And I guess there's at least theories that there's like this huge underground network of them that mostly we don't see. But in any case, in the process of working with these mushrooms, she began to move through her grief in very unexpected ways. And it's not to say that she was healed or cured, but she was able to find joy and re-embrace her life. So I would say that the natural world, and in particular the fungi, was the therapist that actually the therapist that she needed was the natural world, not the human rational brain, but the natural world. I just find that really beautiful. And as a Soto Zen Buddhist, I don't want to get too much into this because I don't know. I'm sure most of you are not familiar, but there's the founder of the Soto Zen school is Dogen Zenji. He was a 13th century priest who lived from 1200 to 1253. Buddhist priest, poet, a philosopher, a mystic. His writing is known for being enigmatic, like nobody understands Dogen, but it's beautiful and poetic. And so I like to, an inspiration for me though, it's kind of something that I just plant deeply within myself, is a passage from his Mountains and Waters Sutra, a sutra being the name of a Buddhist scripture. And Dogen writes, "Mountains walking is just like humans walking. Accordingly, do not doubt mountains walking, even though it does not look the same as human walking. If you doubt mountains walking, you do not know your own walking. It is not that you do not walk, but that you do not know or understand your own walking. Since you do know your own walking, you should fully know the green mountains walking." I'm just going to read that again because I just find it very beautiful, and it maybe takes a moment to sink in at some level. "Mountains walking is just like human walking. Accordingly, do not doubt mountains walking, even though it does not look the same as human walking. If you doubt mountains walking, you do not know your own walking. It is not that you do not walk, but that you do not know or understand your own walking. Since you do know your own walking, you should fully know green mountains walking." Well, very likely your first thought is, what does that mean? So because we've learned in the modern world to privilege the rational mind, the prefrontal cortex, we want to process everything through that filter. Not bad, not wrong, it's just what we do. But Dogen's writing here, I don't think anyway, is not meant to be understood rationally. It's not meant to be, what does that mean? I think Dogen, in part at least, is inviting us into the imaginal realm, a liminal space which hovers between the visible and the invisible, the spiritual and the material worlds. It's a different part of ourselves that we don't give ourselves permission to access very often. And I was also thinking, too, that since Dogen lived pre-Enlightenment era, you know, he was 1200s, he probably didn't even know that much about the rational mind, would be my guess. Who knows? In any case, Dogen is inviting us, I think, to explore that we are not separate from nature. We are not necessarily not part of nature in a sense, but we are nature. That is who we are. We, you know, that what's the old Joni Mitchell song, I think? You know, maybe it's not Joni Mitchell, but, you know, we are the stars, we are the universe, we are stardust. I think that's, is that, I'm dating myself, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, we are stardust. Joni. It is Joni? Okay, thank you. I knew it was somebody in that realm. but this is exactly what forest bathing is inviting us to do, which is to immerse ourselves in the natural world. Again, the more than human world, and discover that we are more than our egoic selves, our vocations, our beliefs, our credentials, and our titles, and our so on. You know, I always imagine, what would I say to someone if I didn't say I was a chaplain and a forest therapy guide and a this and a that? You know, what would I say? You know, I'll say that again a little bit later when I introduce a poet, Fred Lamott, because I love the way he describes himself. And then finally, I'm deeply moved by Thich Nhat Hanh's teaching of interbeing. So Thich Nhat Hanh would say, if we look at this piece of paper, we see a cloud. Without the cloud, there'd be no rain. Without the rain, the trees cannot grow. And without trees, we cannot make paper. So within this paper are many, many things. We can see the sunshine in it. If the sunshine is not there, the forest cannot grow. In fact, nothing can grow without the sunshine. Even we cannot grow without the sunshine. The paper and the sunshine inter-are. And if we continue to look, we can see the logger who cut the tree and brought it to the mill to be transformed into paper. And we see the wheat. We know the logger cannot exist without his daily bread. Therefore, the wheat that became his bread is also in this sheet of paper. And the logger's mother and father are in it too. When we look in this way, we see that without all of these things, this simple sheet of paper cannot exist. Who went to the store and bought it? Who made the paper? Who's the paper mill? I mean, there's all of this is in this piece of paper. So this is Thich Nhat Hanh's concept of interbeing. We're all interrelated. I'm here because you're here. You know, the trees are here because I'm here, because you're here. So those are my inspirations, Dogen, Thich Nhat Hanh's Interbeing, and, you know, BBC Earth podcast. It's actually really good. So I'm kind of pointing to this practice of forest bathing without saying a lot about what it is we actually do. So the simplest version is written by Dr. King Lee, King spelled with Q-I-N-G, who's one of the world's foremost experts on forest bathing. He puts it really simply. How to do Shinrin-yoku in the park. Shinrin-yoku being the Japanese term for forest bathing. Leave behind your phone, your camera, your music, and any other distractions. Leave behind your expectations. Slow down. Forget about time. Come into the present moment. Find a spot to sit on the grass, beside a tree, or on a park bench. Notice what you can see and hear. Notice what you feel. Stay for 2 hours if possible. Sounds really simple, right? But you know, if you can really imagine yourself sitting in a park for 2 hours, noticing what you see, hear, and feel, you're probably gonna, I mean, generally, most people, and it's not bad, you're gonna get bored pretty quick. I gotta do something, I gotta go, I gotta get up. It seems so simple though, right? But I'm thinking that what's interesting is that so many of us have done this or similar as young children. That's what young children do. I remember walking with my granddaughter when she was about 2. We never got very far, maybe half a block, you know, in about an hour and a half, just because she would stop and look closely at everything, a ladybug, a leaf in the gutter, the shape of the crack in the street, you know, just everything fascinated her. And we lose that as we grow older. And there may be some, I mean, there's things we have to do as adults, but it's kind of sad that we lose that, or at least don't give, or if we don't lose it, we don't give ourselves permission to actually do it. We think it's a waste of time to look at a crack in the street for 15 minutes. So I mentioned the Japanese term Shinrin-yoku. The practice of forest bathing actually in and of itself is not that old. It was developed in the early 1980s by the Japanese Ministry of Agriculture, Forestry, and Fisheries, believe it or not. In the early 80s, Japan was transitioning from a mostly rural economy to an economy driven by high tech. So this new work and the concurrent rapid urbanization was extremely taxing, emotionally, physically, and mentally, so much so that the Japanese government noticed a huge increase in various cancers and autoimmune disorders. People apparently were getting sick and dying of stress-induced exhaustion. A new word was coined for this phenomenon, karoshi, death by overwork. And I don't know that Japan has completely moved away from that based on what I read and hear, but this is, kind of a phenomenon there. So the Japanese ministry began several research projects, and one of them was Shinrin-yoku. Shinrin translates to forest, and yoku to bath. And I think it also came out of the fact that the Japanese have a long connection with and aesthetic about nature. So Shinrin-yoku was a natural avenue of exploration. And the government essentially asked what would happen if we put people back in their natural environment. And so that's still a practice that is engaged in by many Japanese. There are many throughout Japan designated Shinrin-yoku trails that people walk on for health and well-being. So again, what is it? There are two meanings to the term Shinrin-yoku from the Japanese perspective, and a third offered by Ben Page, who was a noted instructor with the Association of Nature and Forest Therapists. The first meaning is in the sense of bathing in the forest atmosphere, a sort of natural aromatherapy. Trees and other plants release many organic compounds which are beneficial to humans as well as other life. So by merely walking in the forest, we are absorbing these beneficial compounds through our skin and literally being bathed by them. So some of the research shows that some of these compounds actually boost our immunity and help protect us from certain diseases. And if you think about it, most humans evolved in a forest at some point. So the forest and humans have a very close connection going back many millions of years. And a second meaning is taking in the forest through our senses. So bathing in this sense simply means being in the forest in a slow and relaxed manner, enjoying the forest through all of our senses, not trying to get somewhere, not trying to climb to the top. So a similar activity might be sunbathing, where generally, of course, we do have the secondary gain of wanting a tan, I suppose, at least if we're white. A similar activity might be sunbathing, where generally we are simply experiencing the physical relationship between sunlight and our bodies. We're just lying out in the sun, nowhere to go, nothing to do. You might also think of it as the difference between a quick shower to get on with the day or a long, luxurious bath with candles and bubble bath, where you're just taking it all in through your senses. So this is another sense of the forest bathing. Ben Page offers a third meaning, which is the act of bathing or immersing ourselves in the present moment. So thinking back to that meditation with Thich Nhat Hanh, just being present with what is. So Page writes that in forest bathing, instead of trying to freeze or capture or hold a moment by describing it with our thoughts, we allow ourselves to experience reality fluidly, as if we're bathing in a river of time, letting each moment move through our bodies without attachment or analysis. And I would say from a Buddhist perspective, we notice that we're doing this, and we just let it go, just let it go. I mean, we're gonna do it, because that's how we're sort of wired in the modern world. But we just notice that we do it. A favorite phrase of mine in forest bathing is, notice what you're noticing. Are you noticing your environment? Or are you noticing the fact that your mind is, you know, like a hamster wheel? So forest bathing invites us to experience the world immediately and intimately. You know, looking at these trees out here, the sunlight. I don't know, I did a little bit of research, but I don't know anything about the trees around here, but they're different from what I have back home in Oregon, you know. So different kinds of oaks, it looks like, maybe some maples that are different from what I have back home. I don't see any evergreens, at least not apparent. But, you know, really noticing. Just like with my granddaughter, look, she calls me Nona, the Italian for grandmother. Look, Nona, look, it's a leaf on the street. It's a ladybug on this plant, look. And I'm like, no, look. That's what forest bathing is inviting us to do. And be curious about what you're seeing. So another important part of forest bathing is that I'm not a naturalist. I don't know a lot about that, but it's not about that. It's not characterized by what we know intellectually, whether it's this plant or that plant, but by an immediate embodied sensation of knowing and being known. I think we talked about earlier, previous to the service, about reciprocity, reciprocal relationship. The tree can know me and I can know the tree. So when we cultivate real relationships, recognizing the intelligence, autonomy, and dignity of other beings, that it's not just about us. I mean, I'm thinking now about the hurricane in Florida. My goodness, it's like if you thought you were in control of your life, I think Hurricane Ian definitely showed you otherwise. Definitely showed you otherwise. Or in my part of the world, fires, forest fires. But as our relationships deepen, it's as if the lines between ourselves and the world around us begin to blur. As we become deeply aware that we are nature, we begin to move towards this sense of interbeing that Thich Nhat Hanh was talking about. So I mentioned the poet Fred Lamotte, and I like how he introduces himself, and I'm going to close with a poem that he wrote that I particularly love. And his website says that he's an interfaith chaplain, so he gave himself the label, and college instructor in world religions. I think he teaches at St. Martin's College in Olympia, but I can't, anyway, that's neither here nor there. This is my favorite part. Loves to walk barefoot in wet grass at midnight, unnaming the stars. I love that. It's, okay, that's, you know, Milky Way, or that's the, you know, Big Dipper. Well, what, but unnaming that. We name it and we let it go. What about just looking at it, looking at these stars? So I love that. Barefoot in wet grass at midnight, unnaming the stars. So here is his poem. I don't think it has a title, but. My ancestry DNA results came in, just as I suspected. My great-great-grandfather was a monarch butterfly. Much of who I am is still wriggling under a stone. I am part larva, but part hummingbird, too. There is dinosaur tar in my bone marrow. My golden hair sprang out of a meadow in Palestine. Genghis Khan is my fourth cousin, but I didn't get his dimples. My loins are loaded with banyan seeds from Sri Lanka, but I descended from Ravana, not Ram. My uncle is a mastodon. There are traces of white people in my saliva. 3.7 billion years ago, I swirled in golden dust, dreaming of a planet overgrown with lingams and yonis. More recently, say 60,000 BC, I walked on hairy paws across a land bridge joining Sweden to Botswana. I am the bastard of the sun and the moon. I can no longer hide my heritage of raindrops and cougar scat. I am made of your grandmother's tears. You conquered rival tribesmen of your own color, chained them together, marched them naked to the coast, and sold them to colonials from Savannah. I was that brother you sold. I was the slave trader. I was the chain. Admit it. You have wings vast and golden, like mine, like mine. You have sweat black and salty, like mine, like mine. You have secrets silently singing in your blood, like mine, like mine. Don't pretend that Earth is not one family. Don't pretend we never hung from the same branch. Don't pretend we don't ripen on each other's breath. Don't pretend we didn't come here to forgive. Thank you.